In an election, each person has only one vote, but each person can influence thousands of votes. Find out how next on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. We're joined by Dr. Paul Schenck, our Executive Director, and Janet Marana, our Associate Director. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great. Great to be here.
We are in an election year. We want to talk to our viewers about what they can do as far as being good citizens. We know that good Christians are called to be good citizens, too. And I often reflect on Paul's teaching that we are citizens of heaven. We have our citizenship in heaven. And in the letter to the Hebrews, we read that we have here no lasting city. We await one which is to come. And the question, though, is, does that mean that we ignore what's going on in this world while we are waiting to take our place as full citizens of heaven? Or does it mean that because we are moving towards a new heavens and a new earth, that we do all the more, we take all the more care to improve this one, precisely because when our Lord returns, he's going to take all the good that is in the world and he's going to lift it up and make it last forever.
Well, the book of Hebrews in the Bible says that what we have on earth is patterned after and reflects heaven. So it's as important for us to exercise our stewardship in a responsible and accountable way on earth as it is in heaven. Which happens to be a phrase from the Lord's Prayer as well. In other words, what we do on earth reflects our attitude toward heaven. And the Bible very plainly teaches that there is a God-ordained purpose for government in the world. And as citizens of the nation, we have a responsibility. We have an obligation to fulfill the responsibilities of citizenship, which in our case includes and is actually paramount is the vote, is how we exercise our right to choose our public officials and therefore establish our national and local policy.
You know, and that's the important thing when you're saying choose the public officials. Well, our first obligation is to know the candidates. And looking at the candidates, we have to look, I think, at the life issue as the foundation issue by which we judge a candidate. With terrorism, if a candidate supported terrorism, would we care where they stood on housing, education, or medical insurance, or Medicaid? No, we wouldn't. We would disqualify them just because they stood up for terrorism. Likewise, with the life issue, if a candidate says, I'm for abortion, I think abortion should be legal, well, we don't care what their position is on education or housing or anything else because they've disqualified themselves by saying they're for abortion. So the first thing is, I think we have to say to the viewers, is you got to know where your candidate stands on the life issue as the first thing and educate yourself on whether it's a candidate for school board, city council, mayor, or president of the United States. You've got to look at every candidate and not just go by whether they're a Democrat, a Republican, a conservative, or a liberal. You can't go by that. You have to go by that individual because we know from history, people who were, say, I'm a Democrat, there's Democrats who are for abortion and there's Democrats who are pro-life. And just in the Republican Party, there are Republicans who are pro-life and Republicans who claim to be for abortion. So you really have to look at that person and see where are they on this issue, and then vote accordingly. Yeah.
There are obviously many different issues that candidates have to be concerned about and that they talk about. So we're not saying here that the other issues are not important or that we don't care about them. What we're saying is that it's precisely because we're concerned about all the issues that one's stance on abortion and the right to life is primary, because if that's not there, then, as we often say, if a politician can't respect the life of a little baby, how's he supposed to respect yours? And so to deny the right to life takes away the very heart and soul and foundation of every other issue. Why do we care about the poor? Well, because they have a right to food and shelter and clothing. Well, why do they have a right to those things? Well, because they have a right to live. Why are we concerned about unemployment? Well, because people have a right to work. Why do they have a right to work? Because they have a right to make a living. Why? Because they have a right to live. It all comes back to life itself. You take that out. It's like people say to me, well, you know, abortion is just one of many issues. Well, of course it's just one issue, but the foundation of a house is just one part of the house. Take the foundation away, and sure, there's many other parts, but they're all going to end up in a disorganized heap of junk because they're not going to be able to hold together.
Well, the founding documents of the nation very carefully laid out the plan that the founding fathers had for this country, and one that we have to say produced probably the finest political arrangement in modern history, if not in the history of the world. And so they very carefully laid out the founding structure and organization. And there's a reason why the Declaration of Independence, which was the birth certificate of this country, says that among the rights granted to us by God are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, happiness in that case does not mean just the satisfaction of all our wants and desires. That's actually not the meaning of the word happiness. The meaning of the word happiness means to have one's needs fulfilled private property. But never mind that. Life comes first. And why life first? Because no other rights can be enjoyed if you don't have the right to life. And in addition to that, you know, voting rights are one of the most important principles of a democratic system of government. Without a voting right, you are not a proper citizen of that country. You're not granted civil rights. One of the great achievements of the civil rights movement was the Voting Rights Act, which made voting available to people regardless of their color, regardless of their class, regardless of where they lived, even regardless of their education. Now, there are no voting rights for aborted babies. Voting rights are fundamentally denied because that person is cut off before they can achieve the responsibility of a citizen. So the voting right itself, which is probably the principal political freedom exercised in a democratic society, is denied in the act of abortion because that child is never given the right to vote and never given the right to express all the rest of their rights.
Now, there are many who have the right to vote, and they're not exercising it, are they?
No, and, you know, that's a real problem, because I think very often Christians will sit back and get disgusted with what goes on in society today, and they'll say, oh, you know, I can't make a difference what goes on in Washington or in their state capital government, and they throw their hands up in the air, and they literally just don't participate. And what we have to make them realize is, you know, if we get what we deserve, basically, and if we don't vote good, God-fearing, Christian, Christ-like people into office, well, then don't complain about what goes on in society. So we really have to participate. It's almost like our biblical duty to do that, to participate, because that's how we're going to make effective change in this country, you know, in a more moral ground.
But I would take it one step further, and I would say not only not complain, but assume responsibility, because right. If you have not exercised your right to vote, if you have not exercised your obligation, responsibility to exercise control over public officials. One thing we have to get in mind in a democratic organized society, a democratic structure, we're the bosses. The buck stops here.
We govern ourselves.
I have a voter registration card which says I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the United States of America. There are very few people who understand that. I am responsible for what happens in my country. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not individually responsible in the sense that I can't seize control of the country and make the changes I want to make, but cumulatively, together with other citizens that are like-minded as I am, I exercise that responsibility. So if there's somebody who's doing wrong, I got to work to change it.
And you know, it's amazing how many elections are decided by very, very slim margins. I mean, who can forget the lesson of the elections of the year 2000 for president of the United States? I mean, the 537 votes decided that election. There was an election recently in South Milwaukee for mayor, and the election was decided by one vote, one single vote. And countless elections, you know, they're decided by a number which is easily contained within a single congregation, a single church, single parish. can turn the outcome of a national election. And this is where people have to realize how close these margins are.
Well, I think what we have to do is get people excited more about voting and getting others to vote. For example, once they've examined the candidates and then they've selected, okay, this is the good pro-life Christian candidate, this is who I'm going to support. Now, consider yourself of being on his team. So it's your team against the other team.
Yeah.
And who's going to win? Who's going to, is which team has the best strategy and the most, gets more players onto their team?
Well, yes.
By election day.
That is an important concept because people think of elections as a contest between the candidates. It isn't a contest between the candidates. It's a contest between their teams. And whoever has more activists and more committed and end up getting more people registered to vote and out there to the polls on election day or before, which we'll talk about in a moment, that's the team whose candidate wins.
That's right. So I think, you know, viewers right now should do a little examination of political conscience, so to speak, and let's do a little checklist. Question one, are you registered to vote? If you think you are, is your registration valid? Have you moved since the last election? So maybe you're in a different district and you have to correct your registration. So the first thing is make sure your own house is clean, that you're registered to vote, your registration's in order, and then check with your immediate family. Mother, father, brothers, sisters, and don't forget your grandparents. You know, very often the senior citizens are totally forgotten on this issue. Some of them maybe are a little more elderly and they can't read the ballot. Well, for goodness sakes, you can. If someone is limited sight, you can, first of all, go into that booth with them and assist them. They can get an absentee ballot ahead of time if they're homebound or in a nursing home. So check your immediate family around. Make sure everyone is registered or gets an absentee ballot and so on. You know, and this is the kind of things we can do now ahead of Election Day and making sure, and this is part of that team effort, make sure everyone on your team is ready to go and vote.
Uh-huh. Registration to vote is not a difficult thing to do.
No.
The form is, you know, there's a few questions, right? You know, your name and
address. It's basically your address.
You can get one down. You can download one. Most places you can download them from online,
yes.
The computer. You can pick them up at the post office. You can pick them up at the Motor Vehicle Administration building. In most places, they're very accessible.
In fact, we have on our website, gospeloflife.com/elections, all the information there that people need to know how to register to vote, including downloading the online form, gospeloflife.com/elections.
Right. And then they shouldn't forget their church group. So if you're in a Bible study group, there's no reason why before or after that weekly Bible study, you could bring the forms with you and just do a little check. Say, is everyone here registered to vote? You know, we've got an important election coming up. And then encourage them to then do the same thing. Go home to their own family and make sure everyone in their immediate circle, family and friends, is registered to vote. This is, again, building that team effort.
And there will be some people who will object to that. And they'll say, well, you don't want to turn the Bible study or the Sunday school class or the prayer meeting into a political gathering or bring a political message into it. There will be people who object to that. There are even some pastors who will object to that. But the point here is not that you are politicking. It's that you are exercising your responsibility as a Christian.
Right.
And you're doing it together as Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the responsible thing. That's the important thing to do is to recognize that this isn't about a Bible study group becoming part of a campaign for a particular candidate. It's not at all. Voter registration and voting is something every citizen is supposed to do. There are some countries that actually fine people for not voting. Australia is one of them. So this is a very important obligation, and it's one that Christians especially ought to lead the way as an example.
You mentioned about pastors. Churches are legally permitted to do voter registration and get out the vote drives, as long as they don't say, we're only going to register people of one party. You know, so if you belong to this party, you come and register, otherwise we're going to turn you away. That's what they're not allowed to do. But if they say whoever comes forward wants to register, we will help them register, then they can have the voter registration forms right there in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And they can preach about it in the sermon and then make those forms available right then and there for the people to fill out in case they're not registered.
And they should do that. It's not just that they can. They should. It's another obligation that
That's
should
right.
be made. And most churches will have a state flag, an American flag, in the church building somewhere. That's a sign of good citizenship.
Yeah.
Yes. And the church ought to be an example of good citizenship, and the pastor ought to be the leader, and he ought to be one. Now, some pastors find that a very difficult and complex subject to approach, and that's the reason why at the Gospel of Life website, we have tools available for pastors and Sunday school teachers and prayer group leaders so that they can get the kind of information they need. And it's right there, almost in sermon form.
How to do the voter registration is up there. And then there's also the documents of the legal symposium that took place for clergy and attorneys in June of 2003. It was called The Church and Politics, Are We as Restricted as We Think? And pastors will be able to read there both the theological and legal rationale for doing things like this.
When somebody objects and says, well, the church shouldn't be involved in any of the political process, I usually respond by saying, what would happen if representatives of your local government came around knocking on doors and saying, you know what, we're considering some policies regarding, let's start with Bible studies in homes, right. Sunday school picnics in the park, also whether unborn children should be protected by law. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to get your input. Would you refuse to give your opinion? Right. Would you refuse to give them the information they're asking for? They're doing exactly what we would want them to do, which is to come to the church and say, what is your opinion? And we're going to take your opinion into consideration, and we're going to weigh it with the others, and then we're going to come out with a policy. Well, that's exactly what the vote is. That's every single election, the government is coming around and saying, what is your opinion? What do you think we should do?
Right.
Well, a Christian is obliged to tell them. St. Peter said, if somebody ever asks you, you know, to give an account for what you believe, you tell them. That's our obligation and responsibility.
Right. Now, the church, as we've been saying, as an institution, the individual congregation and parish, is doing all these things in a nonpartisan way. Then the basic difference is between talking about issues and talking about candidates. You can talk to your people about, you know, the specific issues, the moral issues must be preached about constantly, and then you have to say to them, you have to change the world. You have to go out there and elect leaders who are going to stand by these values. The other type of activity, which is precisely partisan, is speaking about the candidates. Now, the church as a institution does not do that. But we as individual Christians or as citizens groups organized separately from the church certainly must do that too. In other words, there's nothing inherently un-Christian or unbiblical about evaluating the candidates, but figuring out which one you want to support, and then getting as many other people to support that candidate as possible, writing letters to the paper, mentioning the candidate by name, calling your friends, talking to them about the candidate, and even volunteering for and contributing to the candidate's campaign. Let's look at this a different way. If believers don't do these things, then who's running the country? Non-believers. If Christian citizens don't do these things, then aren't they accepting the status of second-class citizens?
There are so many examples in Scripture of conscientious Christians, of all Christians, participating in the public square. From the prophets, for instance, Elijah and John the Baptist, who preached and gave their input. They actually spoke the word of the Lord to public officials, to the leaders of the nation. But in addition to that, you have the apostles who went out into the public square, and they called attention to the institutions, and they spoke the word of the Lord, and they made very clear what the message of the Lord was in the public sphere. And again, I just go back to the example of election time. That's when the government comes around and gives us the opportunity to give our input. You know, going back to the idea of being a member of the board of directors of the country. Let's use another example of a family business. If we were sitting around and we were Christians and we ran a family business and we were going to hire somebody to take care of the bookkeeping, all the money of the business, would it be the responsible thing to do for the Christian family members to say, well, we're not going to have anything to do with that. We're Christians. We're going to spend our time in prayer and Bible study and have nothing to do with money. Well, then who's going to hire the person who's going to take care of the family business, the money? Well, let's turn it over to strangers. Let's go out to the street and just find somebody to make that choice because I don't want anything. I'm a Christian. That's ridiculous. Of course it would be our responsibility to see to it that someone who upheld righteous standards and behaved appropriately and believed the right things and did the responsible thing was in that position. And that's exactly what a citizen does when he or she chooses the public official who makes public policy.
Well, you know, the people who are watching, I mean, statistically in the last couple of decades, even in elections, if people who believed, you know, espoused believing in Jesus Christ showed up and voted for good Christian godly candidates who respect life, and we wouldn't be in the mess we're in if people just stood up and said, we're not going to take it anymore, we're going to vote, and we're going to get out in action. I mean, the percentages of people that just stay home and don't get involved are enormous in compared to what it should be. You know?
And the consequences, as we've pointed out earlier in the show, of not being involved are the bloodshed of tens of millions of babies.
Right.
We have an abortion tragedy on our hands by which, and there's nothing that is taking more life than this. And if the purpose of government, if the purpose of public service is anything, it's the protection of life. I mean, how are you serving the public if you turn your back and close your eyes on an entire segment of the public that's being destroyed? It doesn't make any sense. And what good is it to have a great housing and health care plan if the people who are going to take the health care have been killed and the people who are going to live in the houses have been thrown in the garbage? So I want to thank you for both for all that you do on this regard, and we're going to certainly continue talking together, working, and encouraging and inspiring our viewers to take their rightful place in society and as believers to get into that voting booth and vote accordingly. So God bless you. And God bless you, brothers and sisters, for joining us at Gospel of Life. Again, elections are not contests between candidates. They are contests between teams of committed activists. Today, decide the team you're going to be on and start fighting the fight. The Lord is with us, and it's time to change this nation. Stay tuned for our action segment. Welcome to our action segment. Janet, we mentioned the legal symposium during our discussion today. What product do we have for our viewers?
Well, there's a legal symposium held at the Ave Maria School Law in Michigan, and we brought in legal experts from different parts of the country to specifically talk about what people, churches can and can't do. And we have a booklet from that actual symposium of the presentations that these lawyers made. And we invite people to contact us at Gospel Life to obtain that booklet, because so often they're told there's so much that they can't do. If they look at this booklet and get it to their pastor or minister, this will really, really instruct them on how much they really are allowed legally to do.
And they're allowed to do a lot more than they think they are.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, some interpretations of the law are such that you end up concluding you can't do anything at all. That is completely false, and it is a good excuse sometimes for our fears not to do anything, to say, oh, well, legally we'll get in trouble. No, we won't. And there's a lot that, that booklet makes it clear. Now, that seminar, as you say, is available in printed form. It's also on our website, and in fact, people can not only see the text on our website, they can listen to the presentations on our website. So again, it's gospeloflife.com/elections.
That's right. And you know, when you said see how much they can do because they're not going to get in trouble, I mean, I think these legal experts said they don't ever remember a case that was brought against a church for doing any of these election-related activities. So again, it's an unfounded fear that goes on. So we invite everyone to get involved with that.
We also want people to be involved by volunteering for work in their local communities. We at Gospel of Life are in contact with people working in every community throughout the United States. And what we're asking viewers to do is to contact us so that they can do things in their community as Election Day approaches. And we have a team of people ready to work with them to explain what these various activities are. Let's give them a couple of brief examples of what they can do in their the kind of volunteer activities that we're talking about here.
Well, very often, like again, it's that team spirit. You've selected the candidate you want to help. Now the team has to kick into gear. We have to distribute literature.
That's
we're talking
important.
About door-to-door literature. literature.
Door to door.
Sometimes they'll have it done in shopping malls and so on. So literature distribution is very key. And then you have what they call the 72-hour crunch before any election. And that's when they need people to come into that campaign headquarters and man phone banks. It's called the Get Out the Vote effort. And there's other activities, too, with even helping people get to the polls. Very often, again, members of the team will be willing to shuttle people, especially from senior citizens areas or other areas, to make sure that they can, in fact, get to the polls.
Take election day off from work.
That's right.
And work at getting people to those voting booths.
That's right, because, again, it's down to who shows up. Christians have to be the majority showing up, and godly people will take
you know,
those offices.
That's the point. You know, elections are not decided by debates. The elections are not decided by polling. You know, a lot of times, you know, this phenomenon has been seen that the polling shows one candidate ahead by a little bit and the other one behind, and then on election day, the one who was behind wins. Why? The difference is in the turnout.
That's right.
The turnout. We get more people actually on the ground and showing up and voting than the other team does. That's the whole secret. So, again, we're recruiting people to actually do this activity,
right,
to come out to distribute literature. Now, the literature distribution is helping your fellow citizens to know which candidates are on the ballot and what they really stand for. And as we've said before, you don't go in and just vote based on the little letter that comes after the name. You vote on the name and what they stand for and
That's
what
right.
they really are going to do if
That's
they're
right.
put into power.
Exactly. You know, very often it's that old philosophy of people I know. My grandmother even used to do this. They used to just go down one whole column, you know, click, click, click.
You can't do that. It's not a responsible
way to do it. That's not a responsible way
to do it.
It's every candidate on every line has to be researched. You have to know their position and vote accordingly.
Well, what we're going to tell our viewers here is that we've got on our website a questionnaire, all right, that can be filled out, what I can do to volunteer for this election, how much time do I have a car, what kind of activities would I like to do, distribute literature, help. There's also poll watching, being at the polls, making sure everything goes the right way. So you'll be involved in this, as will I, as will our staff. Thanks very much for all these ideas. And brothers and sisters, be in touch with us at gospeloflife.com/elections so that we can help you to do all that can be done in your communities throughout the nation so that we can elect people who will truly serve according to God's law.
I'm Dr. Paul Shank, Executive Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Father Frank Pavone, Janet Moran, and I want to personally invite you to be a strategic part of this new, exciting, and challenging work. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." The objective of Gospel of Life Ministries is to reach out to Christians of all denominations and churches and bring them together in practical ways to proclaim the Gospel of Life and to build a culture of life. If you are a committed Christian, a pastor, Sunday school teacher, church leader, pro-life volunteer, if you have a burden to see believers cooperate together, we'd like to hear from you. To obtain our resources, contact us at Gospel of Life Ministries, P.O. Box 60038, Staten Island, New York, 10306. Call us at 718-980-4400 and visit us at www.gospeloflife.net.